Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. I think I've got a good show for you today. This is episode 60, and what I'm going to talk about today is six conflict areas in marriage and what to do with them. Recently, I had been reminded of the dramatic amount of divorces that take place, not only outside the church, but also inside the church, and read a couple articles on some of the reasons why people are getting divorced, and it made me think about some of the ways in which there is conflict in marriage, and wanted to be able to address some of that. We haven't had a show on marriage recently, and so wanted to talk to you all about some of the ways in which marriages have difficulty and some solutions to that. So it should be a good show for you. But before we actually cover that, I want to give you some other introductory material. First of all, make sure that you are following us with all of the various social media. You can do that on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Also, make sure that you are keeping abreast of all of the changes to the website. The best way to do that is to register as a user of the Legacy Podcast. You can do that on the right column of the website where it says register. That enables you to get all of the updates through email, let you know when new podcasts are up or any blogs or anything like that, changes need to be made, that kind of thing. You will hear about them first, and that's a great way to do that. It also enables you to make comments to each of the episodes, and I encourage your comments. A few people have made comments, and I appreciate that, those of you who have done that. And but best way to give me feedback, though, is actually through my email, which is steve@thelegacypodcast.com. That comes directly to me, and I would appreciate you giving me feedback on what you are liking, what you're disliking, what you'd like to see more of, changes, anything that needs to be done, that kind of thing. I would appreciate that so that I can continue to improve the quality of these episodes for you, the listener. And then finally, if you like what you hear, then I would ask you to consider becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year, and with that you get access to our exclusive members-only page, which has about $50 worth of value with more to come. It also enables you to support the show at less than a quarter an episode. So if you think this is worth a quarter, then I would encourage you to become a Legacy Partner. Okay, so we finished up the introductory comments. Now let's go ahead and take care of the main business of today, which is the six conflict areas in marriage and what to do with them. I'm going to put in the show notes some links to a couple of articles from which I get this information, as well as just some general information that I've received through counseling and through my own marriage. Some of these things have come up, and so that's where I get this information from. But the first one is communication, and communication can be a problem area in marriage. A lot of reasons for that, but one is just because there are some differences between men and women. There's also differences in personality, which we'll get to in just a minute, but typically women need to communicate more than men with words, and so there's already a conflict there where women are always trying to communicate, and well, I shouldn't say always. When I say men versus women in this whole episode, let it be known right from the front that this is stereotypes and not often, or that there are oftentimes exceptions to the general rule. And so here we have a general stereotype that women need to communicate more than men and say more words than men. They've done studies on that. That seems to be proved, but may not be the case for you. But nonetheless, communication can be a challenge because of the need for this communication. And if it's not there, then that can be a breakdown. Now, usually also women are more emotional when they communicate than men. And, you know, if you doubt this, you know, all it takes is just to listen to a conversation between men and women typically, and the women will be talking like crazy. The men will be going, A lot of grunts and noise, but hardly any communication. And so that can obviously be a problem. And, you know, you've always heard about the strong silent type of men and how oftentimes that's attractive to women, and usually you attract the opposite of what you are. And so that can be a challenge. And, you know, communication is important because no one can read your mind. So the first solution that I give to this problem of communication is to communicate. It is important that you are able to express what you're feeling, what you're thinking, those kinds of things, because no one can really read your mind. And so I do not want to in any way indicate that you are not to communicate, but in fact that you are. Now, there are just some differences in how different personalities are. There was a girl that we know from college who she would tell four stories in one story, and I would never be able to handle that. I would never be able to marry her, and obviously I didn't. I married my wife, and I'm happily married to her, but that would be a real challenge. My personality is such, I need to get to the point. I need to be straight there, and then I can, you know, find out once I know where they're going, then I can kind of backtrack on the rest of the story. And so that would be a real difficulty for me. So sometimes it's personality related that these communication problems come up. And but it's important that we communicate what our needs are, what our desires are, what our feelings are, what our thoughts are, those kinds of things, because that is the way in which we develop a oneness through that communication. And we should never assume. I remember a basketball coach that I once had that told me that you should never assume anything, because when you assume, it makes an ass out of you and me. And so, you know, that's just a play on words there, but it seems to be true. When you assume something, no one seems to win. And so a lot of times we like to think, we think we know what our spouse is thinking, but oftentimes we are wrong. And so we need to communicate those things with each other. And that's the best key there. And then along with the communication, another solution would be to consider the other person. If you're one of those who likes to communicate and you know that your spouse is not, then, you know, get to the point, make sure that they're tracking with you. And, you know, a lot of times too, the communication is a problem, because I know that in our house, this has been a problem with me, is, you know, I might be focused on something and my wife will be wanting to talk to me, and I will respond back to her as though I'm listening, but in reality, I didn't hear a thing she said because I was focused on something else. And so it's important to get the person's attention, particularly in a situation like that where you know that the husband can be focused on something else and still respond. And, you know, you've probably encountered that before. And then, you know, later on, she'll say, well, I told you about that. And I'll say, when did you tell me about that? And she'll explain, well, it was when you were working on the thing. Well, that was the reason why. And so we need to be able to communicate in such a way that it is actually heard on both sides. And so consider the other person, consider what they're doing, make sure that they have your attention, you have their attention. And, you know, if you're the silent type, then, you know, you need to open up so that they can understand you a little bit better. And if you're the one who's talkative, then you need to get to the point so that the one who is not so quite so talkative can still track with you and doesn't, you know, lose his focus or her focus. And then another helpful tip when it comes to communicating is, when you communicate your feelings, make sure that you are not belittling the other person. This particularly holds true when it comes to arguing or discussing things where there may be a disagreement between the two of you. You often, in such a situation, you hear the person say, well, you do such and such and such. And when you do that, it makes the other person defensive, and they want to immediately start attacking you, and then it gets nowhere. And so if you read all the counseling books, all the different books on how to better communication, that kind of thing, they will always tell you to communicate by saying, I feel, and rather than you make or you do this or something like that, say, I feel this way when this happens. And then you're expressing feelings. You're not in any way belittling what they do or anything like that, even though they may be a cause for some of that. You are still communicating how you feel and not trying to belittle them. And then, you know, always stay away from words like always and never, because they never get what they want. They never achieve anything good. And so, you know, especially when you are discussing something where you might be at a difference with your husband or with your wife, and you say, well, you always do such and such. Well, that's not true. And when we use words like that, those are words that cause defenses to go up. They cause people to immediately begin to try to defend themselves or try to argue their way out of it, and they get nowhere in that. So don't use those words. Instead, use I feel, as I mentioned before, I feel this way when this happens. And then you're addressing the problem and how you feel, not the person and their actions. So anyway, those are some helpful hints with communication, and certainly communication can be a challenge, but hopefully by following some of those principles and some of those tips, the communication within your home can get better. One final thing with regards to communication is we tend to communicate much like the way that our parents communicated, and we learn that. And I don't know how many of you all have ever heard this saying before, you know, but you know, I'll never say that. My parents said that. I'll never say that. And then sure enough, what we find out is the next fight or the next argument or whatever it is, we end up sounding just like our parents did. That's because it's a learned behavior. We don't really know anything else. And so if that is a destructive behavior that you have, a pattern that you have that you followed from your parents and it's destructive, then, ask the Lord to help reveal that to you and remove it from your life so that that destructive communication is no longer a part of it. So the second area of conflict is the area of money. And as you might imagine, because money kind of makes the world go round and is such an active part of our life, it can be an issue for families as well. And usually the problem comes as a result of different approaches to money. Usually there's one or more money crunchers. Usually one is more of a money cruncher than the other one. In other words, Dave Ramsey puts it this way, you have nerds and free spirits, and usually they attract each other. And so a nerd marries a free spirit. The nerd then wants to crunch numbers, set up budgets, make sure everything is in line financially, whereas the free spirit's just like, hey, let's spend it all. We're not going to budget anything. We're just going to kind of go by the seat of our pants. And as you might imagine, that can cause a great deal of conflict in the marriage. And so different approaches to money can be a problem, but also differences in priorities can be a problem. Often, this is gender-related, but it can also just be personality-related or just, specifically the individual person and how they react or what they want. And so there's differences there. For example, your wife may want to go out to eat more, and the husband may want to spend more on hunting equipment. And so, obviously, as you might imagine, there can be a conflict there. If the husband goes out and spends a bunch of stuff at Dick's Sporting Goods, buying a bunch of stuff for hunting in the fall, and the wife was anticipating using that money to go out to eat and spend some time with her husband, there's going to be an automatic conflict there. And so, money issues can be a conflict. And usually the man is more interested. This is another difference that can cause some problems, is that the man typically is more interested in getting good rates of return with the money than the wife, who's more interested in security typically. And so, when it comes to where we're going to put the money, if they're both trying to decide that, the wife is going to be much more conservative than the husband did, who's going to try to get more return out of it. And so that can also cause somewhat of a conflict. So what's the solution? How do we help deal with some of these money conflicts? Well, number one is to make sure you have a budget. Now, I've mentioned this on numerous episodes before this, not necessarily related to the family, but related to money and how important a budget is, because it allocates the resources in a way that both people have planned. It serves as an agreement or a map so that there can be a unity between the husband and wife. They both agree upon it. Now, that's important. It's not the job of one person to create a budget and then force it upon the other person. There needs to be an agreement as to where this money goes. I've counseled people before who the husband will say has set up a budget and, he allocated, $100 a month for green fees, but $200 a month for food. And then, the wife, he wonders why the wife is not on board with the budget. Well, who could be when various needs of the family are not being met, but golf fees are. And so, it's important to be able to come to a unity on the budget. And once that budget is agreed to, then to make sure that it is followed to the letter. And another good tip on being able to determine what is a priority or what is needed to be funded and what is not is to have both the husband and the wife, if they have something that they want to get that's outside the budget or not normally in the budget, something like that, to list on a scale of 1 to 10 as to what is the most important, what is the least important, and then to be able to look at that and work down each other's lists on that. Now, I have to give you a tip on that, and that is that not everything can be a 10. Unless you have unlimited resources, which most of us do not. And so you have to be able to determine, what is most important, what is not, and then work your way down the list and agree that, you know, maybe we'll work on your number one thing this month, and the next month we'll work on your number one thing, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so it enables you to have agreement and consensus regarding your money. And when you have that, then the fights and the disagreements and the complications that result from money are not there. And so that takes care of money. The third area of conflict, and by the way, these are not in any kind of order as to, you know, the most frequent or the least frequent type of dilemma that families find when it comes to these marriage problems, but they're just in, you know, random order. So the first one was communication, second one was money, the third one is sexual relationship. And as you might imagine, this can be also a very delicate issue, but also one that is very important and can be a real difficulty in marriages as well. And some of the problems, I'm just going to work through some of the problems and talk about some of the solutions as I go through them. One of the problems that occurs sexually in a marriage relationship is a difference in desire. Usually, but not always, the husband has a higher desire than the wife, and this speaks specifically to frequency. And, you know, I think it's ordinarily natural for the husband to have a higher desire. God has put within man certain hormones that create this, and so there is a natural desire there. Now, that's not always true. Sometimes at different periods in life or different situations, that might be different, but usually that's the way it works. And, you know, for the advice with that, it's easier for the low desire to rise to a higher desire than vice versa. It's possible to develop a point where there really is no difference. If the one who has low desire would really work on developing a desire and really work on responding to the higher desire person and that kind of thing, there can be a real oneness there, and it can be a real blessing to be able to rise to that. The solution really is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where in summary, I'm just going to paraphrase it, but it basically says, do what you need to do, and do it with all your heart. And so, you know, if the high desire is, low desire needs to rise to the high desire's demands, and the high desire needs to be sensitive to that, obviously. But that seems to be the indication from 1 Corinthians. Another problem is the difference in what is wanted. Male and female bodies are different, and they respond differently, as you might imagine. And so they, you know, they have a requirement for different things. And it's important to learn what your spouse likes and dislikes. And this may not be the same all the time. Sometimes it may change based upon the seasons or times or things like that. And so it's important to understand what is wanted by your spouse in this regard. And these wants may be different at different times, and they might be different between each other. If you do to your spouse what you want done to yourself, sometimes, even though that might be the golden rule, it doesn't always work out in the bedroom. And so you need to be careful that you know what is wanted by your spouse and then be able to provide that and what is best. You know, just an example is, you know, one may want lights on, the other one may want lights off. And so learning to compromise is a good strategy for this. Maybe one will say, well, not this time, but next time we'll do that, or something like that, or trade-offs. Well, you know, we can turn the lights on if you do this, or we'll turn the lights off if you'll do this, or, you know, something like that. And it provides some kind of boundaries as well as some kind of support for each other in that. And helps to eliminate some of those differences in want. The third area of sexual conflict can be the differences of trying something new. Usually there's one person in the relationship who wants to try new things. The other person seems to be very satisfied with the way that things are. And as you might imagine, this can cause somewhat of a conflict. You know, my position is on this, from what I can gather from the scripture, is that nothing is really off limits as long as it does not violate what the scripture says or commands or regulates. And that's a very broad thing, especially if you look into places like Song of Solomon, something like that. But as long as it doesn't violate the scriptures or is forced upon the other person. And so there has to be some consensus between each other in this. But usually one wants to be more creative and the other one does not. And the one who wants to be more creative needs to learn to be satisfied and savor what they already have. And the one that is less creative needs to take gradual steps at becoming more creative. Maybe what the one who wants to be creative or experimental or whatever you might call it wants to do is beyond what the other one wants to do. Then, you know, maybe rather than going all the way there, just taking smaller steps in that direction can help. And, you know, you never know. Sometimes it turns out that the one that wanted to do the thing finds out it's not that good, and the other one finds out that it is good, and they change roles, you know, but you never can tell. But the bottom line is trying to be able to come together in unity on these issues and work through some of the challenges that are there. So that takes care of that issue. Now, the fourth one is third-party members, and specifically this refers, although not exclusively, but certainly to in-laws. And as you might imagine, in-laws can be a complication when it comes to a marriage. And often it's the problem is that there's too much interference from the in-laws. And this can come in a number of different ways. Some of the most common ways are that the children are still being supported by the parents. And another way is that the children sometimes still look to their parents for needs that their spouse should be providing. And that can obviously cause a conflict. And so, you know, what is to be done? Well, I think one thing that can be done is that the spouse is to ask the other spouse, before they ask their parents for something. And so let's just look at this from a real practical standpoint. Let's suppose that there is a need for something to be fixed in the house. That's a very typical thing, especially as a new married couple, or even as an older married couple, and that, you know, the house starts to need some repair, or there's something that fell apart or something like that. Let's suppose that the husband's not a very good fix-it guy. He just never learned really how to do that. But the father-in-law is. And so, you know, it's real easy for that wife to call up her dad and say, "Hey, Dad, can you come take a look at this thing and fix it?" But by doing that, she's really going beyond the authority of her husband and looking to find her father to meet some of the needs that her husband may be needing. Now, so what should be done? Well, she should ask her husband, say, "Hey, would you mind if I call my dad to see if he can fix this?" Now, usually if she does that, most likely the guy's going to say, "Yeah, sure, bring him over. I don't want to fix it. You know, that'd be great." But if she does it without asking first, then there can be some real conflict there. So that just kind of gives a specific example to a solution like that. Same thing can also be true of, you know, financially, where the wife may say, "Oh, you know, my dad gave us some money to do this," or something like that. Whereas at the same time, the husband wants to be the provider. And when he feels like his father-in-law is still providing, it can be demeaning to him. And so you need to ask about those things first. And then, of course, there's also comparison problems. You know, wives have a tendency to compare their husbands to their dads, and husbands have a tendency to compare their wives to their mother. And, you know, there's a Christian comedian, Tim Hawkins. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to him. If you've not heard of him, you need to listen to him. He's hilarious. But he's a Christian comedian. He talks one time, or he sings a song about it's called "Things You Don't Want to Say to Your Wife." And in that, one of the things that you don't want to say to your wife is something about how much better your mother's cooking is than her cooking. And, you know, that is comparing your mother to her. And, you know, no wife wants to be compared to her mother-in-law. And this happens all the time. And the same thing can be true on the other hand as well, with the wife comparing her father or her husband to her father. And so, you know, what's the solution for this? Well, just don't do it. Either way, it's showing disrespect. So if you compare your husband to your father and your husband is actually better than your father in this, then you're showing disrespect to your father in communicating that. But on the other hand, if your father is better than your husband in something, and you compare that and you talk to your husband about that, then of course that's belittling to your husband and demeaning to him. And so, you know, just don't do it. Just don't do the comparison. And that's the best program there. And then the last conflict area when it comes to in-laws is unwanted advice. And I bet if I were to take a survey of all the listeners, especially those of you who are women, and I asked you if you have ever gotten unsolicited, unwanted advice from your mother-in-law, I bet all hands would rise, because that is so common that particularly mother-in-laws want to provide advice to their daughters-in-law. And there can be a real conflict there. This is usually something because there's always a special relationship between a mother and her son and a father and her daughter. And no mother-in-law typically thinks that a daughter is good enough to marry her son, and vice versa for the husband and the daughter, or for the father and the daughter. And so there's always going to be a little bit of conflict there. But when this happens, when you get this unsolicited advice, the best solution is just to let it kind of roll off. Don't take it so personally. And if it does escalate to the point where it's continuous and it's a real aggravating problem, then it's the responsibility, I believe, of the husband to go and to talk to his mother and to protect his wife from that kind of emotional and mental anguish that is being caused there. So those are some in-laws situations. And, you know, obviously when it comes to in-laws, there needs to be some boundaries. There needs to be some boundaries as to, you know, what is communicated. There needs to be boundaries as to the amount of time and, you know, when the kids are with the in-laws, what's going to be done. And, you know, all these things, they need to be addressed in marriage. And when they are, then the conflicts related to them will be a lot less. Number five, or the fifth area of difficulty in marriage that can often cause problems, is children. And, you know, children are a blessing. The scriptures are really clear about that. But when children, when parents do not agree about their children, then there can be a real conflict. And there are some differences in how they view this. There's often differences as to how many children they are to have. Maybe the wife wants to have three or four, and the father says, no, two's good enough. And I mean, in our society, that's typically how it works. And these things need to be agreed upon. You can't just go at them at a whim, but they need to be decided upon. And of course, the best place to do that is before marriage. But once you're married, of course, if you didn't do it before then, you've got to do it when the time is right. And so the best time to do that is early. So that's the differences on how many. There's also differences in how often. You know, and I'm going to answer a lot of these from a biblical perspective, because I think that, you know, if we try to use this as to a situational ethic type situation, then, we're going to be on the wrong plate, because you ask most couples and, you know, they're going to say two kids is all we really need, whereas the scriptures say, why limit the amount of blessings that we have, and so forth. So in answer to the first question, differences in how many, the answer should be decided by God. He should be the one who is determining how many children that we have. We should not be preventing him from bringing more children into our lives. The scriptures are clear about that. Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth, subdue it. And, it talks about the importance and the blessing that children are. And so we should allow God to determine the size of our family. Now, I know that that was difficult for some and certainly contrary to our society, but that is what the biblical stance is on that. So also with the differences on how often, again, the solution to that is allowing God to determine that. And he will determine that according to the needs that we have and according to his plans and purposes for us. There's another difference, though, and that is, you know, raising the children, schooling them in particular, and what we're going to do with that. Now, hopefully these things should be discussed prior to marriage so that you're on the same boat in that. But if not, and the children come up, you know, when we had our first child, we had not really determined how we were going to school them. I think we had some ideas, and then as time went along, our ideas changed a little bit, and we had to really start coming to grips with what we're going to do with our children when it comes to school. And, you know, my recommendation from what I see in the scriptures is the responsibility of parents to educate their children. And so I would say homeschool. And I understand that by saying that, there's a lot of you, maybe even listeners, who have chosen to do something else. But I would say that the scriptures are really clear that it's still your responsibility. Even if you're sending your children somewhere else, still your responsibility to educate them. And so homeschooling would be the route to take when it comes to that. But nonetheless, you still need to discuss this with your husband or with your wife and make sure that you are on the same page when it comes to this. And there's also differences in discipline. And, you know, you've probably encountered this before already, especially if you have children, how, you know, one parent typically is more lenient than another parent. And maybe one parent follows through more consistently than another parent. Well, you know, your children pick up on this. And when they're able to see some inconsistency in the way in which one parent disciplines with relationship to the other parent, they milk that for all it's worth. And they're able to, you know, manipulate the situation such that it is to your disadvantage and to their advantage. And so you need to have agreed upon standards, because that then eliminates the whole concept of leniency. If there's an agreed upon standard and there's an agreed upon punishment or discipline for that standard or for violation of that standard, then that allows for unity in the home and keeps from having children be a problem in that area. And then, you know, one is usually more consistent than the other. And to this, I say it's important to be consistent. You can't really have proper discipline in the home without having some consistency. And so, you know, in this situation, if one is less consistent than the other, then that person just needs to learn to be more consistent in his or her discipline. And then, so that takes care of children. Well, actually, let me back up for just a moment and talk a little bit more specifically about the children playing one parent off the other. And you will find that if there is not agreement on both the discipline as well as the standard, that the children will work towards the least, they will work towards the most lenient of them and try to get their way that way. And of course, all that does is it causes a disunity. And so my encouragement for you in this regard would be to make sure that that you as a husband or as a wife is united with your spouse against your kids. You never want to unite with your kids against your spouse, but rather you want to show a united front, so to speak, against the kids so that they will be able to see that. So if it requires you having to leave the space with your children and go to another room and discuss the issue and come out united, whatever it takes, it's important to be united when it comes to that. And then the sixth area of conflict with marriage would be expectations. And usually these fall into two categories. One is that there are expectations that your spouse will meet all your needs. In other words, you might get married thinking, you know, my spouse is going to be XYZ and do XYZ for me, and it's going to be great because that's something I've always wanted to have happen and so forth. And then you get married and they may not do what you were thinking they were going to do. And as a result, you're disappointed. You know, the scriptures say that hope deferred makes the heart sick. And so if you have certain hopes that you anticipated prior to marriage and then they were unfulfilled, then it makes your heart sick. And that burden can be carried with you for, you know, years and years. And so what must happen? Well, it is possible that, you know, your spouse can meet some of your needs. And, you know, it would be naive to think that we go into a marriage expecting only to give. No, we go into marriage with an understanding that there's going to be a give and a take in that relationship. And yet, we should also go into the marriage with the understanding that if you have to give 100% and receive zero, then that's what we should do. You know, the model the scriptures give us for a husband-wife relationship is the relationship between Jesus and his church. And Jesus was willing to die to give up everything for the sake of his church. And so that is the perspective that we must have when it comes to our relationship with each other as well. And, you know, only God is the one who is able to truly meet our needs. And yet we should do all that we can to try to meet the needs of our spouse. And then also another expectation issue that is brought up that can sometimes be a challenge. And that is that sometimes we go into marriage thinking that we can change our spouse. You know, we like everything they do except for this one thing, and we think, well, that's not a big deal. They'll change once they marry me, and, you know, I'm able to point out to them the truth and enlighten them regarding the situation that they'll finally change. And then we end up marrying them, and they never change, and we wonder, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that we really can't change anybody. Now, the scriptures do say that we can give some kind of influence, and sometimes our influence is able to make some changes. I think of 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, where it says, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear." So the idea behind that, of course, is that if a wife is married to an unbeliever, if the wife is able to live in such a way that it honors the husband and is quiet and gentle and respectful, then that can sometimes change the way that the husband is. And so sometimes we can influence our spouse by the way in which we live, and yet we cannot expect that to happen. We can only know that God is the one who is able to change the hearts of men, and He is the one who is able to make attitudes change and reactions and situations change. And so only God can really change the heart of someone. And as a result of that, we need to put our trust in Him with this regard. And so when it comes to expectations, we need to first and foremost lay those expectations at the feet of the cross and ask Jesus to give us the courage and the strength that we need to live in joy and in harmony with our spouses, even if they never make those changes. But at the same time, that He would pour out His Spirit upon them so that they might grow and make those changes necessary if they're good changes. So hopefully this has been helpful to you, that you've been able to address, you know, as we looked at some of these issues, maybe some of the issues in your own marriage that have been troublesome. And, you know, I would encourage your feedback if you know some other areas or some personal anecdotes or stories or whatever it might be that relate to this. I would encourage you to get with me on those at steve@thelegacypodcast.com or register as a user of the website and then post a comment under the comment section of each of the posts. And maybe we can get some good dialogue around these issues. But with that, this has been Steve Donahue with The Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy? That I live only for the cause of Christ.